good time of fellowship and encouragement. I'd like today to turn to the book of 1 John, chapter 2. 1 John, chapter 2. I'd like to read verses 15 passeth away, and the lust thereof, which he spoke of in verse 16. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. What we read here is very, very plain. It's very direct and very absolute. What is written here concerns every child of God upon this earth and is taught throughout the Word of God by precept and by principle. And it is something that demands the attention of every one of us as children of God. What we read here is of an extremely serious nature. It is a matter of great significance, a matter of great consequence. It is something that concerns us as individuals and our relationship or connection to the world. It is a command forbidding something, and it is a warning against a fatal attraction, love of the world and the things of the world. It presents to us a threatening current, and is something that the masses of God's people have succumbed to. What is written here is very real and always present battle, a very real and always present danger. It is something that we are confronted with every day of our lives, something we are bombarded with constantly. What is written here is something that is extremely dangerous, harmful, detrimental, and lethal to Bible spirituality and godliness. So I want to speak this morning on a command and a warning concerning that which is lethal. I want to consider two main points. We have many sub-points, but two main points. First of all, we want to look at the object that is forbidden. And then we want to look at the act concerning that object that is forbidden. First of all, consider the object that is forbidden. Notice verse 15. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. This is present imperative negative. It is a call to reject and to avoid something. It is a call to say no to something. It is a call to overcome something. Again, no child of God is exempt. No child of God is absolved from the command, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. The remainder of the passage contains descriptions of the object that is forbidden. And those descriptions serve as reasons that we are to give heed to the commandment and the warning. And these descriptions serve as a deterrent to disregarding and disobeying the command and the warning. These descriptions also serve as a motive for obeying and giving heed to the command and the warning. So, the object forbidden goes in two directions. Notice again verse 15. Love not the world. And then notice, neither the things that are in the world. So we have two objects. We have the world, and we have the things that are in the world. So let's consider these two objects. The word world, throughout the New Testament, is the Greek word cosmos. Context always determines its meaning. In the context of what we've just read, it is not referring to the planet. It is not referring to humanity. It is referring to a system, a method, an approach to life. It is an order or an arrangement of a particular kind of life. The Bible very plainly teaches in unmistakable terms that the world is a system, has a system, is under the dominion of and the embodiment of Satan. The world has a system, bears the image of Satan. The world has a system. Satan is its prince. He regulates its policies. Has a system. It is synonymous with the kingdom of Satan. And as a system, it is the very sphere of rebellion against God. Has a system. Christ warned against it time and time and time again. When Jesus became incarnate, we read in John 1 and verse 10, the world knew him not. And again, that's talking about a system. It's not talking about all of humanity, because there were some of humanity that did know him. It's talking about a system. And we in John 7 and verse 7, Christ said, me, it hateth. It's not talking about all of humanity, because all of humanity didn't hate Christ when he came. It's talking about the world as a system. He said in Matthew 18 and verse 7, woe unto the world because of offenses. Paul said in Galatians 1 and verse 4, he spoke of this present evil world. And Peter mentions in 2 Peter 2 and verse 20, the pollutions, not talking about air pollution, the pollutions of the world. And John informs us in 1 John 4 and verse 3 that the spirit of Antichrist even now is already in the world. In 1 John 5, verse 19, he says, the whole world lieth in wickedness or in the lap of the wicked one, sound asleep. So in our text, John is talking about a system of evil. He's speaking of the world as a system of evil. A system that is satanically informed. A system that is satanically ruled. The truth is, this system is the pathway of the unsaved. Ephesians 2, verse 2 and 3 makes that very clear. It is the pathway of the unsaved who know not God, who walk in the darkness of their fallen state, and are under the rule of Satan. It is described in Ephesians 2 and verse 2 as the course of this world. The world has a system. Is the viewpoint of man without God, without Christ. It is their viewpoint concerning God. It is their viewpoint concerning life. It is their viewpoint concerning man himself. So it is the world view, the world as a system, is the world view of unsaved humanity, estranged from God, darkened in their understanding, and who are spiritually dead. The world has a system, is the sum total of the thinking, the ideas, the philosophies, the values, the attitudes, the ambitions, the goals, the pursuits, the reactions, the behavior of those who are alienated from God. That is the world system. But he mentions something else also. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. So we have to describe, what does this mean? Neither the things that are in the world. I believe this speaks of the substance, the content, the theme of the world system. Those words, neither the things of the world, or neither the things that are in the world, are the expression, the demonstration, and the passion of the world spirit. It is the expression, the demonstration, and the passion of a world that receives its information from Satan. It's very important of where we receive our information. This world receives its information from Satan. The words, neither the things that are in the world, I believe, has reference to how the world goes about, and again, I'm speaking of the world as a system, goes about its business, how it operates, how it functions. I don't believe it's simply talking about the material things of the world. Cars and homes. That's what people put on their list. But I don't think that's what this is really talking about. It might be included in some way. But it has reference to how the world goes about its business. It speaks of the priorities of this world system. It speaks of the interest of this world system. It refers to that which absorbs the attention and the time of the world system. It is what the world system values. It's what the world as a system treasures. It is what the world as a system is driven by. And the phrase, the things that are in the world, is further explained in the next verse. Notice verse 16. For all that is in the world. What's that referring back to? Well, it's referring back to neither the things that are in the world. Now he's going to give us an explanation of the things that are in the world. For all that is in the world, that is this world system. And he classifies these things under three avenues, three sources, if you will, three outlets. The lust of the flesh. The lust of the flesh. Now, the lust of the flesh, the desires of the flesh, can refer to two things. And I believe it refers to both. It can refer to our physical impulses, the desires of the flesh. It can also have reference, of course, and more so here, to the sinful, corrupt, and depraved nature of man. This flesh, according to Romans 7 and verse 18, is entirely evil. In it dwelleth no good thing, Paul said. And it is referred to in Romans 7 and verse 20 simply as sin. Sin. That's the best description of the flesh. Sin. And in Romans 8 and verse 7, being sin, it is at enmity against God. And it is not subject to the law of God. And it is incapable of pleasing God, Romans 8 verse 8, so then they that are in the flesh cannot please God. The scriptures tell us that the flesh is active. This is brought out in Galatians 5, verses 17 and verse 19. It is also said in Galatians 5 and verse 22 that this flesh has affections. That is, it has likings. There's things that our sinful flesh likes. It has lusts. That is, it has desires. So the world's way of life is geared toward the desires, the passions, of the physical impulses, but worse than that, the sinful, corrupt, and depraved nature of man. We can be sure of this. The aims, the purposes of the world center around the flesh. The content, the substance, and the theme of the world as a system is the flesh. The world's way of life is patterned to fulfill the lusts of the flesh. The next thing he mentions is the lust of the eyes. The ways of the world are designed to gratify the sight. And the world's aims and purposes center around appearances. The lust of the flesh is fed by the lust of the eyes. And as Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, the eye is the gateway to the mind. In other words, Satan uses the lust of the eyes to blind and defile the minds of men. But the lust of the eyes must not be restricted to evil gazing or upon unlawful objects. But it includes all forms of earthly mindedness. The lust of the eyes. It is the desires that come from visual perceptions and mental conceptions. The lust of the eyes is the carnal mindset with all of its sinful curiosities, and the way of the world's way of life is designed to feed or fulfill such. And the world's way of life is lived in response to the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes. The next thing we read is the pride of life. Everything about the world's way of life feeds upon man's pride and promotes the pride and self-esteem of man. The pride of this life is conceit of self, its superiority. It's the pride of life that grasps after power. It is the pride of life that seeks the chief places. It is the pride of life that covets positions and influence. It is the pride of life that thirsts after admiration and adulation and applause. It is the pride of life that strives after the honors and dignities of the world. It is the pride of life. Selfishness is the pride of life. The world's way of life centers around and is lived in response to self. Self-absorption, self-glorification, self-gratification, self-esteem, self-service, self-will, self-seeking, self-sufficiency. The world's mindset is me-focused, reward-oriented. I deserve such and such because I've done such and such. That's the world's way of thinking. It has a fixation and an obsession with self. So we have these three avenues: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And they are the motivating factors, and they are the spring of action for those who are of the world. It is what characterizes people living in accord with the world system. It is people living in this world responding to the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It is people living according to what emanates from the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It is people living according to what feeds the lust of the eyes, or the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. You'll notice each one of those avenues speaks of self-desire and self-gratification. That's the world's way. The world is governed and the world is driven by these things: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. In other words, the world is driven by natural passions. And that's evil. We see from these three avenues that flesh, the eyes, and pride are the sources from which the people of the world draw from. They are the things that animate the people of the world. Again, verse 16, for all that is in the world. He then goes on to mention three governing sources of such. And then he says in verse 16, is not of the Father. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of the life, and the life that proceeds from these things is not of the Father. In other words, the world's way is not to be governed by God, but rather to be governed by the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. In other words, the way of the world is people living not of the Father, but they live according to their own assessment. So we have two things forbidden, the world and these things of the world. The object forbidden, verse 17, is vain and in a vanishing state. And the world passeth away. And the lusts, mentioned there in verse 16, thereof. In other words, the world is temporary. The source and the way of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is all temporary. The world's way of life is lived in response to the temporary. The world's way of life is driven by the temporary. That brings us to our second point. There is an act that is forbidden. We are specifically forbidden not to do something concerning the world and the things of the world. Notice verse 15, love not. Love there is a verb. Denotes an act, something we do. The word not is an adverb used to form the negative. In other words, a certain activity is being prohibited, is being forbidden. Christ addressed this matter in Matthew 6, verse 19. He gave the flip side of it in Matthew 6 and verse 20. He gave the reason for it in Matthew 6, verse 21. We've run out of time, so we're not going to go to those verses. Paul addressed the matter from the positive angle. In Colossians 3, verse 1, set your things on affections above, and then from the negative angle, not on things on the earth. So what is being forbidden is what is known in Christian circles as worldliness. Worldliness. Leading up to the words of our text, John had written in chapter 1 of Fellowship with God and the joy of such. He wrote of walking in the light of His presence. He wrote of abiding in Him, keeping His commandments, and living victoriously. There in chapters 1 and 2 leading up to our text. And now he says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. What we read here is absolutely essential. If we are going to live the life that John wrote of leading up to the text, we must honestly face and grasp what is being said in these words, in these verses. If we're going to live a spiritual life, Each one of us individually has to face these verses. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. So what is being forbidden, what we are commanded not to do, is to be worldly. It is a command against worldliness. And we must not be deceived concerning what is being said here. We must not be deceived, and I believe the majority of Christendom is, concerning what constitutes worldliness. Satan and man's own sinful heart have perpetrated the deception that worldliness is limited to certain outward behaviors. And most have formed in their mind a mental list of what is worldly. You know what the problem is? We all have different lists. We all have different lists. One person, and it's not my intent to preach against any of these things, though I am against what I'm saying, but that's not the intent, just to make a point. One person is against going to the movie theater. Another person sees nothing wrong with it. The person who thinks it's wrong, if they're not careful, this is their mindset. I'm okay, that person is worldly. One person thinks that they shouldn't shop at certain places. I will not shop at JCPenney. Will not do it. Not going to go into that. You may. The danger is that I do not think that you are worldly because you go there. There are restaurants. Some will go to, some will not. We all have different lists. And Satan, the way Satan works is, people do these certain things according to their list, and then Satan rocks them to sleep, you're okay. They're worldly. That's a deception. That is a deception. And I believe that way has been propagated through preaching for a long time. Now, without a doubt, before someone gets all upset, worldliness is expressed externally. No doubt about that. Worldliness is expressed by our choices, our speech, our dress, our entertainment, places we go. It is all expressed in those things, no doubt. But we can't all have different lists. But that's what's happening. This person doesn't believe in celebrating Christmas. This person does. So the person that believes in celebrating, they're worldly. That's the mindset of people today. That's the way it works. And I believe that's of Satan. I believe Satan has deceived people. At the core of worldliness is the internal. Worldliness is first a condition of heart before it is an outward behavior. What I'm saying is, worldly behaviors do not make you worldly. They manifest that you are worldly. So-and-so does such-and-such, therefore they're worldly. Well, they may be worldly, but it's not because of what they do, it's what is produced. The act. The truth is, you can do that which is right externally and be guilty of worldliness. You can stand and sing songs and hear preaching and be guilty of worldliness. You can do the right things and be guilty of worldliness. When you get upset that somebody who you view has not lived as righteous as you do, and they get something that you don't have, and you're upset about that, why are you upset about that? It's because you're worldly, my friend. That's worldliness. That's worldliness. I deserve that. That you're upset about it says that you want it. That's worldliness. I do everything right, and this is what happened. That's worldliness. That's worldliness. We must not be deceived. Love not. Now, love indicates an attachment, a devotion to, and a passion for. It indicates a yearning. We are not to be attached. We are not to be devoted to. We are not to have a passion. We're not to have a yearning for the substance, for the theme, and for the content of this world. And if we do, we are worldly. We are not to live by the impulses of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And if we do, we are worldly. We are not to be driven by the flesh. We are not to be driven by worldly mindedness. We are not to be driven by pride. And if we are, we are guilty of worldliness. The source of our life is not to be the lust of the flesh. It's not to be the lust of the eyes. It's not to be the pride of life. And if these are the starting point of our actions, we are guilty of worldliness. Then we're guilty of worldliness. You do something, so-and-so will think well of you. That's worldliness. That proceeds from the pride of life. That's worldliness. It is the source of our thinking, our ideas, our philosophies, our priorities, our attitudes. If the source of these things be the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, then we're guilty of worldliness. If these are the things we depend upon, we are guilty of worldliness. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Again, this is a command against worldliness. And he goes on to say that such is incompatible with love to God. If any man, verse 15, if any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Here you have the love of the world and the love for God pitted against each other. And they're always pitted against each other. And they're always contrary to one another. Worldliness is to be influenced and driven by the workings of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, rather than being driven by love to God. If it is not love to God that drives you, if it is not giving glory to God that drives you, you are worldly. You are guilty of worldliness. Oh, but I don't go such and such a place. That's fine. And I'm glad you don't. But that doesn't mean you're not worldly. This is where Satan has deceived so many. James presented the same thought in James 4, verse 4, that the friendship of the world is enmity with God. Notice verse 17. I like that clock, but I don't like that I can see it too well. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. Then there's a contrast. But he that doeth the will of God. The world's way and the will of God, two separate things. Anything other than living under the government influence of God, anything other than doing God's will, is worldliness. The words love not the world, neither the things that are in the world, are a call to personal examination. I believe all of us are worldly to one degree or another. We all have worldliness in our lives. all of us. We must realize that. And we must deal with that. So this is something that we as individuals must honestly face. Am I worldly? Am I worldly? I'm not interested in your list. Not even interested in my list. Am I worldly? We can determine that by answering several questions. What is it that forms my perspectives? Is it the world or is it God? What is it that forms my thoughts? What is it that forms my attitudes? What is it that forms my reactions? Is it the world or is it God? Is it the flesh or is it God? If we react according to the flesh, that's worldliness. If our attitude is shaped according to the flesh, that's worldliness. What is it that forms my behaviors? We do the right thing, but why do we do it? Well, I don't want to disappoint so-and-so. That's worldliness. That's worldliness. Need to ask ourselves, how do I look at God? How do I look at life? How do I look at self? How do I look at others? How do I look at others? Why do we do what we do? All these answer the question, are we worldly? What is our hope fixed upon? What's our hope fixed upon? To what are we anchored? We must honestly answer these questions as individuals. The sad thing is, usually when you read 1 John 2, verse 15, I believe people begin to think of other people right away. And that's a deception of Satan. We need to think of ourselves. So what is most important and valuable to me? Well, I can say a lot of things. We all can. But the true answer to that question is the true answer to another question. What will I rearrange my life for? What will I rearrange my plans for? That's what's most important to you. We are to rearrange our lives for God. First and foremost. So we need to ask ourselves, what will I rearrange my life for? Oh, the list is long. So this is a call to self-examination. Is it not also a call to rise above the way that this world lives? I don't want to be worldly. And I want that which is in my life that is worldly gone. I really do. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. That is a call to rise above this world. It is a call to live a peculiar life. It is a call to live a life driven and motivated my love to God. It is a call to be ruled by God rather than the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. It is a call to live in a different realm than the world. It is a call to live a God-honoring, God-exalting, God-glorifying life. So love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. The very fact that these words were written reveal that worldliness is a very real danger to each and every one of us. The words reveal that worldliness is something that we are prone to. We are prone to live by the lust of the flesh. We are prone to live by the lust of the eyes, and we are prone to be driven by the pride of life. That's true of all of us. We are prone to these things. So we need to ask ourselves, are we convinced that this is a danger and a threat in our life? It is a danger and threat to true spirituality, to biblical godliness. Oh, that we would each resolve to engage in the battle against worldliness in our own life. In our own life. In those attitudes. The thinking. The behaviors. We need to engage in a fierce battle in our own life concerning worldliness. Worldliness. We need to examine every day. We need to examine everything we do. Am I doing this from worldly reasons? Worldliness is far, far, far reaching. It is not just limited to what you have on your list or what I have on my list. It's not just limited to those things. The truth is, some things that are on my list and some things that might be on your list may not be worldly at all. But we need not to be rocked to sleep concerning what real worldliness is. God help us to individually battle this sin and collectively as well. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.